classes on Srimad Bhagavatam. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Canto 5, Chapter 5, Lord Rishabhdev's teachings. Text 16.
Loka, loka, swayam se yasi nashta drishti. Yotan samihita na kama kamaha. Anyonya vaira sukalesha hetor. Ananta dukam chana veda mudha. Loka.
Lord Rishabhdev speaking to his sons and other sages. Due to ignorance, the materialistic person does not know anything about his real self-interest, the auspicious path in life. He is simply bound to material enjoyment by lusty desires, and all his plans are made for this purpose. For temporary sense gratification, such a person creates a society of envy, and due to this mentality, he plunges into the ocean of suffering. Such a foolish person does not even know about this. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The word nashta drishti, meaning one who has no eyes to see the future, is very significant in this verse. Life goes on from one body to another, and the activities performed in this life are enjoyed or suffered in the next life, if not later in this life. One who is unintelligent, who has no eyes to see the future, simply creates enmity and fights with others for sense gratification. As a result, one suffers in the next life, but due to being like a blind man, he continues to act in such a way that he suffers unlimitedly. Such a person is a mudha, one who simply wastes his time and does not understand the Lord's devotional service. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita 7:25,
Naham prakashak sarvasya yoga maya samavritaha mudho yang navijanati loko mama jamambhiyam.
I am never manifest to the foolish and unintelligent. For them, I am covered by my eternal creative potency, Yoga Maya. And so the deluded world knows me not, who am unborn and infallible. In the Katha Upanishad, it is said,
Avidyayam antare vartamana swayam dhirak panditam manyamana.
Although ignorant, people still go to other blind men for leadership. As a result, both are subjected to miserable conditions. The blind lead the blind into the ditch. In this verse, Lord Rishabhdev is giving a very concise description of the demonic mentality. And when I saw this word nashta drishti, I was reminded of the Bhagavad Gita. In the 16th chapter, Krishna is also describing the demonic mentality, and he uses the same phrase, although a little differently, but the same idea of having one's vision destroyed by the process of sense gratification. So I'd like to read a little bit from the 16th chapter. We can review the description of the demons. Now, our scripture is meant to restore our vision. We sing every morning, Om Gyanam Tamadam Dasya Gyananjana Shalakaya. That the spiritual master, he finds us in a state of agyan, in a state of darkness. Agyanam Tamadam Dasya. And he opens our eyes with this, we say, torchlight. It's actually like a little medical instrument, Shalakaya, to practically pry our eyes open so we can see the truth. This is the function of the spiritual master. And this is his mercy. And all the sadhus and all the scriptures and Krishna himself are endeavoring to do that, to restore the vision of the conditioned souls who are blinded by ignorance and by the results of surrendering to kama, krodha, moha, lust, anger, and so forth. So in there is so much description within our Shastra of this demonic mentality, of the difficulties and the sufferings that accrue to one who follows the materialistic path. If you think about the Srimad Bhagavatam, you'll see that in every canto, there is a description of the materialistic life, difficulties involved, and of course the means out of it. Here in the fifth canto, we have Lord Rishabhdev's teachings. We also have Bharat's teachings to King Rahugana, the description of the forest of enjoyment. And even within Rishabhdev's teachings, we find the contrast given between the path of light and the path of darkness. The very first verse of his teachings, those of you who know this can chant with me, Nayam deho deha bhagang niloke kashtam kamanarati vidbhujange tapo divyam puttakahena sattvam shunye jinsma brahma saukyam tvanantam. So there he's describing in one verse the stark contrast between a life devoted to hedonism, simply serving the senses, and the life of purification. And he says there that for those who have achieved this human form of life, it's not proper to dedicate themselves simply to enjoying the senses, just being no better than the hogs that eat stool. Vidbhujange. So what's the alternative? Tapo divyam. The practice of austerity. Human life is meant for tapasya. But not just any kind of tapasya. Everybody's performing tapasya. To go to work in this city, fight this traffic, breathe this smog, in order to make a little money, that's big tapasya. People are suffering like anything for a little money or for material education. That's a big tapasya. But it's not tapo divyam. It's not divine penance. We have to know how to perform proper austerity for purification of our existence. Sattvam shuddhi. And what is the advantage of purifying our existence? Brahma saukyam tvanantam. We can enjoy unlimited and unending happiness, spiritual happiness, in contact with the Supreme Brahman, Krishna. So that is the stark alternative that we have. Unfortunately, most people do not even know about it. They have no idea. They're simply covered over by lifetimes and lifetimes of absorption in the modes of passion and ignorance. And so they have no inkling that there is another way of life, another source of happiness and safety. And they simply fight their way against the material energy. So this is the description here. And in the Bhagavad Gita also, in the 16th chapter, Krishna describes this stark contrast between the way of light and the way of darkness. He begins this chapter with a list of divine qualities, of uplifting qualities. I won't go through all of them, but you can study. Fearlessness, purification of one's existence, cultivation of spiritual knowledge, charity, self-control. All of these processes we learn in qualities we try to cultivate in Krishna consciousness. These are the divine qualities that, the beginning with pridelessness. It always begins with pridelessness because that is the proper attitude for approaching the guru, the source of divine knowledge. We have to give up our own ideas that we know what is best for ourselves. We have been battling against the material energy for lifetimes, creating so many philosophies, following blind leaders, blind leading the blind, and suffering so many lifetimes. So the beginning is when we surrender and we accept knowledge coming down from the pure source of the parampara, beginning with Krishna himself. That was Arjuna's great decision at the beginning of Bhagavad Gita. Right? Karpanya dorsho bhata svabhava prichami dvam dharma samudha cheta. That my consciousness is now bewildered about what real dharma is. So he says, Yakshreyatsyam nishtitam bruhitanme. Please, Krishna, describe to me how I can achieve this Shreya, my ultimate good. I am your shishya, I am a disciple, I am now surrendered to you. The same word Shreya is used in this verse of the Bhagavatam. Shreyasi nashtadrishtir. Being blind to their own self-interest. So they try to find self-interest in the temporary pleasures of this material world, and they suffer again and again. Ananta dukkam. This is the nature of the material energy. In the In the Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada was very fond of quoting this verse, which describes the responsibility of human life and the great value. And then again, this word Shreya comes in, especially Nikshreya, ultimate good. He says, Labdva sudurlamamidam bahusambhavante manushyam artadamanityam apihadira tunam yate tanapate donamrityaya vat nikshaya saya vishaya kalusarvataksyat. He says, we have attained, after many, many births, this rare human form of life. Sudurlamam bahusambhavante manushyam, human life. And it is artadam. In other words, in this form, and in this form alone, can we achieve the real purushartha, the final goal of human existence, or the living entity's existence, which is liberation from birth and death, and reinstatement in our place in the kingdom of God at the lotus feet of Lord Sri Krishna, Sri Radha Krishna. So that is the goal, but only in human life is it possible. But like every form of life, anityam, it is temporary. The clock is ticking, the sands are flowing. There is no time to lose. So therefore one has to be dhira. One has to be even-minded. One has to be inquisitive into this science of bhakti. And then, turnam yateta, one without wasting any time, immediately strive. This word yateta means to strive for the goal. As long as the body is not at the point of death, napatet anumrityayavat, what strive for what? Nikshayasaya. The ultimate goal of life. Not the prayer, not the immediate sense gratification, but the shreya, the ultimate goal, which is eternal reinstatement in our position in the kingdom of God. Because after all, in every form of life, you enjoy different sense gratification. Vishaya, kalusarva taksya. Vishaya is sense gratification. In my country, you may know this phrase, they say, been there, done that. You know? When things become stale, it says, okay, I don't want to do that anymore. I've been there, I've done that. You see? So we've already been there, done that. We've done all kinds of sense gratification. All varieties of sex, all varieties of food, all varieties of this and that. We've experienced it already. Don't waste your time in that pursuit, which will simply keep you on the torture wheel of samsara, suffering. This is the basic message of Rishabdi. And it's the basic message of Krishna, because they're the same personality. So let's review some of these demonic qualities. I remember when I first picked up the Bhagavad Gita and I read this chapter, I saw myself. I said, this is what I've been all my lifetime. This is the kind of mentality I had in this life. And of course, Krishna condemns it. So the first quality of the demon, he says, Krishna describes a little summary verse, Dumbo Darpo Abhimanascha. Now, Dumba has different meanings. It can mean pride. But the primary meaning of Dumba is deceitfulness, hypocrisy. The demons are never straightforward. Just like you go to any, you know, a merchant. They're always trying to sell you something, make a profit, create a certain image that is false. Throughout this city, I noticed, there's no restriction on the billboards. Right? Billboards come up anywhere and everywhere. This is not what it's like in America. There's no zoning. You know, you can't do that in America. But they're always assaulting you, right, with messages, always coming at you. You just walk down the street or drive down the street. So that's part of Dumba. They're trying to sell you something that is promising an experience that you'll never have. You know what I'm saying? This is what advertising means. To create a need for something you don't really need, a desire for something you don't really need, and to promise you an experience that you will never have. This is the quality of the demons. Darpa abhimanascha. The word darpa is interesting. You know, it also means mirror. You know that? Cheto darpa namarjana. The mirror of the heart. Darpa also means pride, conceit. You're preening in front of the mirror. See? This is me. See? It's a very interesting language, Sanskrit. Darpa, conceit, abhimanas, pride, krodati. Krodha means anger. Because if one is very proud and one is very arrogant, then he's always looking for his own interest and sense gratification. And as soon as that's a little frustrated, it immediately becomes anger. Angry. You can see how much someone is in the mode of ignorance by how quick they are to anger and take offense. In my country, in certain parts of the big cities, If you walk down the street, we have these gangs. I don't know if you have those here yet. Hopefully not. But the gangs, they have, you know, different names. Crips and Bloods. You know, the Crips are known for crippling their enemy. The Bloods are known for, you know. So these people, if you just look at them in the eye in the wrong way, immediately they take offense and they'll beat you up. You see? Very quick to anger. This is a demonic quality. As devotees, we never take offense. Right? If someone offends us, if we're actually the advanced devotees, they don't take offense. They're not quick to anger at their own offense. They just take it in stride. Because the devotee means humble and feeling unworthy, you see? Just the opposite of the demons. And parushim, very arrogant and quick to violence. And of course, it's all based on ignorance, ajnana. So then he starts listing some of the qualities. Pravittim cha navrittim cha janana vidurasara. They don't know what's to be done and what's not to be done. Now, the first thing we learn when we come in touch with Krishna consciousness is that there are do's and don'ts, isn't it? In any yoga process, there are do's and don'ts. Ashtanga yoga begins with yama, niyama, right? The don'ts and the do's, the proscriptions and the prescriptions. This is what it means in any discipline of life. To get to any goal, you have to stop doing one thing and you have to start doing another. If you want to become a doctor, you have to study certain things, go to certain classes, do that. And while you're doing that, you're not doing other things, right? So this is our whole life is made up of doing one thing and refraining from another. But the point is, it's meant to lead us to the ultimate goal of life. The demons don't know that. They don't know what is to be done, what is not to be done. And there's no cleanliness, no proper behavior, no truthfulness in them. All of that is lost. And then they say, there's really no truth in this world. Everything is relative. And they now have this idea of relative ethics. You see? Whatever is good in that area, that's what real morality is. The only way you can have that idea, which is mentioned in this verse, number 8, is that there's no ultimate authority. So they say, Jagat Ahur Anishwaram. They declare that there is no God in control and that there is no ultimate foundation. And everything is just a mixture of atoms and molecules. You see? Ultimately, consciousness, personality, is just a result of the mixture of atoms and molecules. You can see why Srila Prabhupada was so adamant to push this point that life comes from life, not from matter. This life from matter idea is totally demonic. Because if life comes from matter, then it means that if you manipulate matter, you can create life or you can completely control life. And I'll give you an example of that. In the sphere of psychiatry and psychology, right? They're dealing with people's mental and emotional problems. So what over the last 20 years or so, the whole field has been entirely overtaken by drugs. By medications. For every disorder, depression, or too much sleep, whatever, you can take some drug that will change your brain chemistry, and this will change your consciousness, and you'll be happy, or you'll be able to sleep, or you'll be able to get up, or whatever it is. So some people, when they wake up, they have a whole shelf full of medications that they take in order to adjust the consciousness just right so they can face the day. You see? And then at nighttime, they have to take another group that will help them to fall asleep. You see? So this means that it's simply manipulating the brain in order to affect consciousness. And so naturally, the idea is that consciousness comes as a result of the brain, which is just matter. This is what it means to say that everything is aparaspara sambhutam kimanyat kamahoitikam. What effect is there other than simply lust? That is simply the cause of everything. So, in that etam drishtim, now we get to this verse that I was thinking of. Etam drishtim avashtabhya nishtatmanolpa buddhaya. In this drishti, now a drishti means a way in which you see yourself and the world. It's a philosophy of life. Everyone has it. We all have this self-conception. You can think back to when you were a child. You saw the world differently. First of all, everyone was very big and you were very small. That in itself creates a certain mentality, which one of pretty helplessness, right? In other words, you're helpless in this world where everyone is much bigger and stronger than you. So you have a whole different view. Your life centers around your family, your mother, your father, your children, You don't even know anything about beyond your little village or town, whatever it is. So this is your drishti. And, what's important is playing all day, having fun with your friends, whatever you like that. So as you grow up, your drishti, your way of seeing yourself in the world, and everything changes. And on the basis of that drishti, on that vision, you act in a certain way. You think certain things are important, certain things are not so important. And this is constantly changing as you go through life. So the demons have accepted this drishti described in the previous verse, which is that there's no truth, there's no ultimate God in control, there's no real foundation to life. Everything is simply up for grabs. Whatever you can grab in this world, in this lifetime, that's yours, that's your reality. And this is the demonic vision. But this is a destruction of the soul. Krishna described it, nishtatmana. In other words, they completely lose sight of the eternality of the soul. Because if you believed or you understood that you lived before and you will live again, then whatever you do in this lifetime will have ultimate consequences that you may not like. So that changes everything. So demonic vision is only this one spot life. And whatever I can do in this life, that's it, and we're finished. This is hedonism. So the soul is destroyed and very foolish in this way. But in this mentality, ugra karma, you are surrounded by it. You see, we're all surrounded by ugra karma. This horrible activities meant to destroy the world. So much science development. The chief way in which science is used in the world is creating new weapons. Whenever there is an advance in science, immediately the military grabs hold of it and tries to use it to get some advantage for weaponry. And in this way they produce not only atom bombs, hydrogen bombs, but whole, chemical weapons, biological weapons. All of that is ugra karma at the greatest degree. And it's all produced by this false vision of reality, this demonic vision. So this is the world we live in. This is our environment. And we are trying to cultivate the divine qualities to combat this mentality and these qualities that are so prominent. And kamam ashritya duspuram, they take shelter of these material desires. In other words, this is what they accept as the be-all and end-all. And again, dumba comes in. Hypocrisy, deceit, mana, mada, all of these qualities, pride and arrogance. Mohan grihitva sa grahan pravartante asuchi vrata. They take unclean vows and they're bewildered. Grihitva asad. Now, grihitva asad means grabbing hold to the impermanent. Does this ring a bell with anyone? Prahlad Maharaj, when he's speaking to his demonic father, he said the same thing. He said, my dear father, what is that? How does it begin? Asuyavaya, what is it? Tatsadamanya, thank you. Tatsadamanya asudavaya dehinam sadasabudhvinda dhyama sadgrahat. Exactly the same thing. Tatsadamanya, he says, the best thing, O Father, O best of the demons, asuyavaya, for the dehinas, for the living entities, who are always, their minds are always disturbed, right? Sadasabudhvinda dhyam. Why? Asat grahat, because they've grabbed onto and taken shelter of the asat. Now, in this lifetime, we're all looking for two things, basically. Happiness and security. But you can't have one without the other, really. So, security means some kind of a safety from the attack of the material energy. So we're looking for some home, we maybe put a fence around it, we have our family, insurance policy, right? This is all part of the search for security. But how can you be secure when you, like the Bible says, when you build your house on the sand, you see, or on the mud flat, right? Just think of the tsunami, right? The tsunami just came, just out of the blue. No one thought it could happen. Hundreds of thousands of people on that rim of the Indian Ocean. Who expected it? They woke up that day. They went to work. They said goodbye to their family. There's the house on the beach, right? They thought they were secure. You know, the ocean had never come up beyond its bounds. There's the ocean. This is the land. Suddenly, the ocean now just flows right in. Finished. Now there's so many people with psychological problems. They can't look at the ocean. They can't see the ocean. It's a great frightening thing. Yeah. So they asadgrahat. And this whole lifetime is like that. The demons, those who are completely dark, have no spiritual vision, they take shelter of these temporary things. As I mentioned, insurance policy, the family. What does Shukadev say at the beginning of second canto? He said, Deha patta karatradi shaitmasaineshva sattvapi. Te sharmbamato nidadam pashyan apinapashyati. We take shelter of these fallible soldiers. Soldiers are meant to protect you. Right? So here's my soldiers. The body. Right? The body. How secure is the body? The body is just this fragile little instrument. Now I have a little problem with my back. I can hardly stand up straight. You know, before I thought I could dance like anything. Now the back hurts. The foot goes. The eyes go. The ears go. But this is the first line of defense. Then, of course, you have your children, your wife, the extended family. I can add the bank account. The list given by Prahlad, by Rishabdev right here. Griha, Cheta, Suta, Apta, Vittar. Right? You have your home, you have your land or job, your children, they're a very important shelter, of course your money, and your relatives, extended family. All together, I'm very secure. Thank you very much. Right? But it's all illusion. He says, Tesham Pramato, because they're Pramata, man, they don't want to see. Nidanam Pashyan Apina Pashyati. We've all seen. How many, all of us probably here have some relative who's died. Grandfather, great-grandfather certainly have died. Tragically, sometimes your wife will die, your father will die, your children will die. It's part of history. Nobody who is living in the 19th century is alive today, right? Practically every single one is gone. So, but we don't see. Though seeing, we don't see. Tesham Brahmato Nidadam Pashyan. Again, we come back to the nashta drishti. We come back to the destroyed vision. They don't want to see. If you can't see what you don't want to see. So if your whole purpose in life is enjoying temporary sense gratification, you don't want to see the bad things that are going to happen from that. Right? Even if it's right in front of your face. And so they take shelter of these insatiable desires and being absorbed in the impermanent. Chintam apadimeyam cha pradayantam mubashita. So in this mentality, the worries and anxieties are unlimited. We can see, we have our wonderful sangha here of devotees. And how the very, as Prabhupada would often say, the very face is the index of the mind. So devotees' face, they clear up. There's a joy there. There's a peacefulness that comes. But you look at any of the materialists, especially as they get older. Every young person is very confident and happy, you know, in their life generally. The juices are flowing, you know, but as you get to be 30, 40, 50, the worry lines come in, you know what I mean? This is what happens because there's this great burden of trying to find happiness and security in this material world. So Krishna says, Chintam apadimeyam cha. What happened to the volume? It's a little too loud. Pralayantam upashita. Up to the point of death. Right? On to the point of death. There's no time where they suddenly become realized. This is why we have in our varnashram, there's a point. Even if you enter household life, which inevitably must have some of this absorption in the, you know, money and household, there's a point when you still have your senses strong, around 50 or something, when you're meant to start becoming detached from that. Not to the point of death. Not that you stay in that cocoon, as Prahlad Maharaj says, of household life to the point of death, and then, like the silkworm, get put into the hot water. And suddenly everything comes crashing down on you. No, that's not the Vedic culture. We're meant to detach from these entanglements before birth. So, asha pasha shita buddha. This is the nature of the demons. They are bound by unlimited ropes of hope. You can just remember that phrase. Asha pasha. All of these material desires are just like ropes that are binding us to the material world. Sometimes they're called riddhya granti, like the knots in the heart. They have to be cut by the process of detachment through devotional service. So this phrase also, kama upaboga padama, means seeing as the supreme thing the enjoyment of sense gratification. So in this mentality, they're absorbed kama bhoga artam anyanena ta sanchayam. They secure money by illegal means. So there's no limit. Recently in America, some of you may be aware, in the early, like the 2000, 2001, we had these huge industries, Enron, electricity company, multi-billion dollars, you know. I mean, and it turned out to be a whole sham company. And the people at the top were just milking the company and you know, and the whole thing went totally bust. You know, we're talking like $50 billion was like wasted. It disappeared. You know, no one knows where it is. So these people at the top, these companies, they have no morality. They have one morality, making more money. That's all their purpose is. And to that means they'll destroy anything. They'll destroy the environment. They'll destroy their own workers. You see? There's no heart there. You know, it's been lost. This is demonic mentality. And then Krishna, in this memorable phrase, he takes the role of the demons. He imitates the demons and gives the mantra, the demon's mantra. Ishwaroham maham bogi, siddhoham balavan sukhi. That's the demon's mantra. I am the master. I am the enjoyer. I am perfect, powerful, and happy. You see? And you see, this is what they advertise. Try to get into that mentality. You see, if you don't think you're a controller and you can enjoy, then we can help you develop that mentality. You listen to these tapes. You can have confidence and enjoy, you see? The whole thing is a society of demons. So then Krishna continues to describe, and eventually, of course, he says that these people are, living entities, if they don't reform, they'll go down and down and down and cast into lower species of life. So what is the remedy? At the end of this chapter, Krishna describes in succinctly, Trivadham narakasedam dvaram nashanam atmanaha. Kama krodas tata lobas tasmat etam trayam chajet. There are three gates leading to hell. Kama, kroda, loba. Lust, anger, and greed. In the third chapter, Krishna said the whole root of the problem is kama. That kama, or that ardent desire for enjoying sense gratification, beginning with sex, as is mentioned here by Rishabhdev, is the root of the whole problem. Why? That kama is originally prema. That prema has been adulterated and transformed into kama by contact with the material modes of nature. So that desire needs to be purified and distilled, refined, back into prema. So kama is the door, and that leads to anger. Right? If your kama is frustrated, you become angry. And then lobha means just wanting more and more and more. There's no limit to it. So one should give that up. And then what? Etava mukta kontaya tomodrara subhinaha acharat yatmanakshayas tato yati padam gatim. Here's the contrast we're looking for. He began describing the daivi sampat, the qualities of the suras, of the demigods and the devotees. And now he's ending also with a description of the proper means. And he says, they should acharati, you have to behave, you have to change the way you act for your ultimate good of your soul. Shreya, the same word coming up again. You remember in the verse, Shreyasi Nashtabhishtir, they have no idea, they cannot see their own ultimate benefit. So here, for our benefit, we give up these three doors, we reject them, the gates, and we act for our ultimate benefit. And ultimately, tato yati param gatim, we go to the supreme goal. And then in these last two verses, Krishna gives us this essential instruction. And to take this if you take nothing else. Yak shastra vidim utsrija, vartate kama karataha, nasa siddham avapnoti nasukham na param gatim. So the whole way, or the whole means we have, the essential means, is the shastra. Given to us by gurus and the whole parampara. So the shastra provides vidhi. Vidhi means instruction for proper behavior. But if we give that up, utsrija, we neglect the instructions of shastra, then what are we going to act on the basis of kama, on the basis of material desire? Then what is the result? Nasa siddhim avapnoti. You cannot attain any perfection, which we defined earlier as liberation from birth and death and reinstatement in the kingdom of God. That's impossible. And you cannot have any happiness. And you can certainly not go to the supreme place or the kingdom of God, the spiritual sky. So that's the result of acting whimsically, rejecting the Shastravidhi. Therefore, Krishna says, last verse of the chapter, Tasmat Shastram Pramanam Te Karya Karya Vibhastito. This is the key instruction. Prabhupada's whole mission is based on that. His mission was based on establishing the authority of genuine Shastra and creating a society of souls who are following the Shastra and propagating these principles throughout society. And this was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission. His mission was to spread Bhagavatam. Yes, it was based on the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is Shastra par excellence. So, our pramana. Pramana is very important. It is our evidence. We've talked earlier about the drishti, about the philosophy of life, how you see yourself, how you see the world, and how you act. That is based on pramana. If we take our senses as pramana, we're finished. The senses are notoriously imperfect and impossible to attain any kind of transcendental knowledge. But that's what most people do. The senses and the mind, which are full of mistakes, imperfections, cheating propensity, right? And so we have to have Shastra as pramana. According to what? Karya, karya. Again, we come back to this idea of doing and not doing. Yama, niyam. What to do and what to refrain from doing. And then Krishna ends the chapter with a very important statement. He says, okay, now you've taken the pramana. Then you actually have to do it. He strikes it home. He says, Gyatva Shastra Vidanottam Karma Karta Viharasi. Then, thus knowing the Shastra Vidhi, what it says, one should perform that activities as a matter of duty. Now this idea of duty is very important in our philosophy. Because we are so conditioned, the natural tendency is to act according to material desire. If we just float downstream in this world, then we'll act according to the dictates of the senses. You can see amongst children, not these children, are being trained, but ordinary children, they'll play all day. They don't care anything about education. If you give them something to eat, they won't eat the vegetables, they'll just eat the sweet rice and the halva, right, until they get sick. Right? So they don't have any understanding of what to do, what not to do. The parents have to direct them. So even though they may be screaming, they go to school like that. So we're adults, you know, we have to take it upon ourselves to perform as an act of duty against the grain. We want to do this, we won't, because it's against the Shastra. It's against the instructions of the Guru. We don't want to do something, we do it anyway as a matter of duty, because we know it's to our ultimate benefit and it's pleasing to the Guru and pleasing to Krishna. This is what it means to do something as a matter of duty. It means recognizing a higher authority in our life and accepting that. And from that acceptance, that vidhi, that's vaidhi bhakti, bhakti according to the rules and regulations, we eventually come to the point of raganuga bhakti, spontaneous, where we find ourselves performing these things, chanting and performing our services out of real desire, which means we're becoming purified. Because the natural state is to be spontaneously attracted to serving Krishna. That is the natural state of the soul. We have to have faith in that. Because right now, sometimes we want to serve, sometimes we don't, you see? Well, the mind is flickering. So, accepting these vidhis, as Rishabhdev has given, means, as he gave this whole list, you remember, just in last verse or so, of things to do and things not to do, beginning with surrendering to the Paramahansa. So, they're not so attractive to do, on the basis of material consciousness. But we know from our intelligence, the key is the intelligence, we should do this for our ultimate benefit. Accept this austerity, accept this purification, and we'll come to the state of Brahma Saukhyam Tranantam. So these occasional descriptions, which we find periodically throughout our Shastra, of the material state of life and the suffering that accrues from that, are essential for us. We shouldn't neglect them. We know we like to read about the Leela. We want to chant all day and just to float along in the nectar, and that's fine. But don't neglect these parts of the Shastra. Because until we're on that Paramahansa stage, where we can always be drinking that nectar of devotion, we need this reminder. I often give this analogy. How Krishna is inviting us He's inviting us to come back. He's giving us his darshan through the murti, through the archa, vigraha. He's come and given us his holy name, which is sweeter and sweeter the more you chant it. We've had so much opportunity to chant like this. Everything is attractive. He's inviting us. But we're so covered over, sometimes we like it, sometimes we don't. You see? So the impetus is twofold. One is this attractive nature of Krishna. All attractive, in truth. But on the other side is the trident of Durga, giving us the push from behind. Okay, you're not so attracted to Krishna, now look at me. Here's birth, old age, disease, and death. Here's the threefold miseries, you see, pushing you from behind. And Prabhupada's preaching had both elements. So many times, how many times did he stress the difficulties of this material world? One should understand, what does it say in the 13th chapter? Janma, mrityu, jara, vyadi, dukkha, dosha, and darshanam. This is an essential part of knowledge. To always be aware of the evils of birth, old age, disease, and death. And therefore not to act in such a way that we'll have to suffer these things. I see, it's very, very intelligent the way you organize this temple. If the speaker goes over time, you simply put chants in the doll. And then the coffin comes and he can't speak anymore. Very nice. So I think I'll leave it at that. I think we have the message. These teachings of Rishabhdev, most of you don't know, but we just produced a book, a Prabhupada book. A new book has come out called Spiritual Yoga. It's a book by Srila Prabhupada, taken from his instructions on Lord Rishabhdev's teachings. It's a small book, but it's a potent book. And we've assembled them. I pulled out these purports are there, plus selections from his lectures on the very verses. And that eventually will make its way here. It'll be one of your books for distribution. There's another book, Bhakti, the Art of Eternal Love, which is taken from Nectar Devotion and the Prabhupada's lectures on Nectar Devotion in Vrindavan. So you can watch for those. These teachings are important for today. People should have that, you know, where they open the book and one of the chapters is called The Pain of Fleshly Pleasures. What do you mean? The pain of... What is that all about? But that's what Rishabhdev is all about. He's given the sauce. He's not holding anything back. He's training up his 100 sons now to take over the world and to rule the world, especially Bharat, of course. So he's speaking very concisely and very strongly. And these are for us, these teachings. They can help us be fixed in devotional service. So I'll leave it at that. If there are any questions or comments, we can try to entertain them. I'm sorry if I spoke so fast. Some of them may have gone by you. It always happens to me. It's the way it is. Sorry. Any questions? Any comments? Okay, maybe to jog your memory, I'll read the translation again. Due to ignorance, the materialistic person does not know anything about his real self-interest, the auspicious path of life. He is simply bound to material enjoyment by lusty desires. And all his plans are made for this purpose. For temporary sense gratification, such a person creates a society of envy, and due to this mentality, he plunges into the ocean of suffering. Such a foolish person does not even know about this. So, no comments, no questions. We can adjourn. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.